Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The following program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery. Cane Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. For more information, visit www.cane5.com.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. We're here at Roberta's. It's a nice, brisk January Monday. A little chillier than the October-like weather we've been having so far. But I don't know, maybe that's a new record. Mm-hmm. Weather-wise, do you track records here?
We do have some weather related world records.
That's my guest today, Dan Rollman, one of the two co-founders of recordsetter.com.
Yes, thank you.
Formerly known as Universal Record Database.
Exactly,
yes. Which is a little clunky, as you can tell.
So we noticed it and now we're Record Setter. Yep.
Cool. How come you're not wearing one of your signature yellow jackets?
I apologize. Maybe the listeners can pretend, but
they can see everything. You're not in costume. Just kidding. That's the beauty of radio, isn't it?
It's wonderful to pretend.
I'm referring to the signature costume of these folks when they go on tour. Most of your events are live, or most of your records are. Perform live or no?
It's a mix. I mean, basically, recordsetter.com is an open platform for any and all world records. So the simplest way to think about it is kind of the Wikipedia to Guinness's Encyclopedia Britannica. And most of the records we get are people at home who just say, I want to set a world record, and there's nowhere else that I can put this and get it recognized, so I'll just shoot it on video and upload it myself. But as you mentioned, we often do live events in New York and beyond where we put on our trademark yellow jackets and document people setting world records.
Right. So if I understand correctly, at first it was sort of like this traveling freak show where you guys would have these events and people would set the records live and videotape them to everyone's humiliation.
It started at Burning Man. So some friends and I were going to Burning Man and we wanted to kind of develop a creative camp, a place where people could come up and participate in some manner. And I've been a huge fan of world records since I was a 10-year-old boy and got my first Guinness book. So I said to my friends, like, why don't we create a camp and just let people come up and invent their own world records? And, you know, we just did it for fun. This was in 2004, and we just did it as like a fun project. And people came up and just kept blowing us away with records like the fastest accordion rendition of The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Ooh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And then another guy was on those springy stilts, and he did the most consecutive backflips on stilts.
Whoa.
And so we were just seeing like this amazing display of human creativity, and and we were just letting people create the rules and invent the world records themselves. And you know, at this time, this was when Wikipedia was really starting to blow up and change our notion of what an encyclopedia was, and use the powers of the internet and kind of the collective hive mind to create something much bigger. And with all these world records that kept growing at Burning Man, I thought there would be an opportunity to kind of open up and democratize world records and make a platform where there's
where everyone is the best at something.
Yeah, exactly. Right? That's our core philosophy. So I met my co-founder, Corey Henderson, who was a tech genius extraordinaire, and said, you know, we have 100 world records from Burning Man. Let's build a website where we can, allow people to dream up and create their own world records.
Now, what was it that you saw at Burning Man that must have inspired you to do this? I can't even imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure it's a lot of crazy stuff.
You got to come sometime. It's a lot of fun. The magic of Burning Man is that, there's no commerce. So it's a community of 50,000 people, and all this creativity is on display, but they're just doing it out of kind of a labor of love. So, you know, musicians are bringing their own turntables, and dance troupes are doing their own performances, and they're just doing things that they love to do. And
sort of like a homegrown variety show, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description. And kind of one of the core philosophies of Burning Man is no spectators. So like after going for 1 or 2 years and just kind of saying, wow, like I am in an amazing amusement park and I'm kind of sucking up everybody else's energy, I think I really said, you know, I reached a point of saying like, all right, I want to participate in this, and I want to think of a way that we can, you know, my friends and I can do something and give back. So
awesome.
that was kind of the birth of, we were called the Playbook of Records at Burning Man, and then URDB, and now recordsetter.com.
And now a book called The Record Setter Book of World Records, which is, it looks kind of like a tongue-in-cheek version of the Guinness book. Is that the idea? But it's...
I don't think no? Tongue... We sometimes are asked whether what we're doing is tongue-in-cheek or ironic, and I don't look at it that manner. I think we're just trying to make something that's more open.
Right, or a new and updated version of Guinness book.
And again, I think the book is not just a display of other people's world records, but it's really hopefully a inspirational starting point, so that if you read the book and you say like, wow, these are fun world records, but I want to get involved and set some world records myself, there's a lot of tips on setting world records.
Yeah, like I want to beat this guy who had the longest time to spin a basketball on a pinky while wearing a 5-foot fake mustache.
And there's even a tip for beating this record. So
You're giving away. Okay.
So if any listeners have a 5-foot fake mustache, please contact Kathy Irway. She's on Twitter at
I'll be on Kathy the next Irway. Next week's show. We'll have a lineup of guests trying to do that. What I like about it is that you have a lot of food-related records. It seems like people just gravitated to, or I know you had a food-related live event that was food related records.
Right. That was when we first met, because I'd heard about your book project and thought it was awesome. So I said, we're doing a night of live food related world records. And there was the tallest s'more was made that night. There was,
Adam was eating, somebody ate like 2 pounds of herring in minute or something.
I think he'd set the record for the fastest time to spell I love herring using herring and then eat it. And you came and we recognized you as being the fewest meals eaten out by a New York City resident in 1 year.
Right. Except I didn't have anything to perform, so I just got up on the stage there and
made fun of people for a while. I had emailed you out of the blue, and I think you were a little bit taken aback. But as I said to you,
that was fun.
it was a great night. I said to you before the show, we would love to have you back for one of our other live events, and we'll think of a new record for you.
All right. Well, hey, you set a record right here yourself. I know you said there's none of your own records in this book.
I've said a lot, but they're not in our new book.
Well, I think you guys set a record for the best record setter book of 2010. Wait, sorry, 2011. It just came out a couple months
ago.
We just
did a tour across North America promoting the book and we set an amazing amount of world records around the country.
So how did you choose? Because I know, how many records do you have in this database?
We have over 12,000 from more than 60 countries now.
How did you choose? You had to whittle it down to choose the best of the best for this book, correct?
Yeah, this was a really difficult task, both to sort of figure out which records we thought kind of added
up.
Mine
didn't make it in.
I know, I'm sorry. It was really difficult. And then, you know, another part of the challenge in writing the book is, you know, these records, people will invent these amazing world records, and they get beaten all the time. And so, like, we'll have the record for, you know, the most images of Uncle Jesse from Full House opened in a web browser at once, which is in the book, and it becomes competitive. Like,
wow.
So you put up these, like, you know, kind of left field world records, and all of a sudden you have these amazing competitions going on. So it was really challenging for our team of writers as we worked on the book, because we would have a world record set and we would interview the person and we would get their tips and we would have the page finished, and then all of a sudden we'd come in and some new person had beaten the record.
And I bet the original record setter now is on a vengeance to win that title back, and it's a back and forth ongoing obsession.
I would say the best example, or the most extraordinary example of that that we have on our site was right after we launched the site, a guy from Australia named Daniel Fowler set a record for the most giraffe tattoos on a shoulder.
Oh.
And he had won. And this was like a perfect example of like the openness of the record setter philosophy and platform is like, we believe everyone can be the world's best at something. So that was the record he wanted to set. So we had that record. And then a guy from San Diego, a radio station in San Diego said, all right, there's this world record on recordsetter.com for the most giraffe tattoos on a shoulder. We've brought in a tattoo artist, and are there any listeners who are willing to come in and beat this guy's record? So like half a dozen listeners were like, free tattoo, man. Like, yeah, dude. and this guy, Mike McDonald, came in and got three giraffes tattooed on his shoulder live on this radio show. And then, you know, and I always say this was like the day we were like, okay, what we're building works because people are competing in these categories, but also, you know, we've opened a Pandora's box and I'm a little scared. But
I know. I was hoping that you wouldn't say the guy who sticks pencils in his nose should try to get.
I know. Well, we encourage safety. But so the guy in Australia, like, so a couple months later, I came into our office here in New York, and like my team was like, Dan, you're not going to believe it. I was like, what's going on? And they're like, the guy in Australia, the originator of that category, he had gone out and he got three more giraffe tattoos on his shoulder and like sent in this.
Of course.
It's featured in our new book. But and you should pick up the book just to see the photos of this guy and his four giraffe tattoos.
Wow. So is that the end of it, or is there somebody?
Well,
tiny giraffes.
We've heard a lot of rumblings, and we were actually out in San Diego on the tour, and Mike McDonald was planning. We went on like a local television show, and he was going to come on and do it, but I think his fiance wouldn't let him.
I was about to say, I was like, who are these people? Like, they're just, you know,
they're creative folk. They're creative, extraordinary folk who've never had a place for their talents to live.
And it sounds like there's this community that has been built through Record Setter. It sounds like you know them pretty well. And for better or for worse. Just kidding.
No, I mean, we have like people, you know, our most sort of the most prolific and kind of the superstar of the Record Setter community is a guy named Brian Pankey of Springfield, Illinois. He has set over 2,000 world records on our website.
Wow.
And he's inspired. Somebody made him like a fan art book after he set 1,000 records. And people have made paintings of him. So like,
they've gone on to do their own projects based on the records.
Yeah, and cool. They try and take him down. He's been on Letterman now. He's been on Tosh.0. So he's kind of blown up from our website.
Well, congratulations. That's awesome. I'm going to cut to a quick musical break that you chose. Brian Adams will be right back after the break.
Thank you.
must have done it.
All right, so we're back on Heritage Radio Network. Let's Eat In with our guest, Dan Rollman from Record Center. And he happens to be a Canadian, so that's why we had the little Brian Adams
interlude. Shouts to the North Coast, if anybody's listening.
Awesome. So Dan was just telling me he got back from a two-month road trip for touring for the book's promotion.
Yeah.
With the gang.
Yeah, we our publisher, Workman, very graciously sent us on a live event tour to bookstores and book festivals, and we did some live events of our own to do world records around the country. And I was just starting to tell Kathy, in Phoenix, we tried to do like regional records in all the different cities we were in. So like in Atlanta, Georgia, we did the most people to share a Coca-Cola, which,
what?
it was fun. It was tough. It was sort of ironic because we wanted to use a can of Coca-Cola. That's like the classic size. And we were driving around Atlanta before the event and we couldn't find cans of Coke. Everybody sells the dang bottles. But we succeeded. But in Phoenix,
how many people were drinking out of the shared can of Coke?
I think it was
bottle?
Like 20 or 25. It's a breakable record. So if you're ever having a party of, you know, more than 25 people and want to beat that world record,
I'd like to try that. That sounds cute.
Yeah, it was fun.
Everyone sips and it's gone.
Yeah. We also have another one of my favorite records, which is in the Record Setter book, is the longest straw used to drink a Coca-Cola.
Oh, and somebody had to build a straw? Wow.
Excuse me. That's a competitive category. Like, that's been broken a few times.
Cool. How was the food on the road trip you're mentioning?
Because
you're foodies, both of you guys, right?
And yes. We ate well. I have to give... I mean, Chicago deep dish pizza just like is my death row meal. I love it. But when we were in Phoenix, we found out that there's a movement underway in the state of Arizona to make the chimichanga the official state food. There's currently no official state food in Arizona, and Phoenix takes great pride in claiming ownership of the chimichanga. So we were partnered with a local restaurant down there called Macayo's, and they brought in this like pretty large, it was probably like a foot long chimichanga. Mm-hmm. And then we, similar to the Coke record, we did the most people to share a chimichanga.
Nice.
And we had like 30 people, but you know, like the local news was all excited.
I think that's breakable, definitely.
And if you check out sayyestochimi.com, you can join, you can sign the petition to help the chimichanga become the official state food.
And is every state supposed to have an official food?
It was all new to me, so it's a great question and one that perhaps you can research for a future episode. But we should think of what, I don't know what the new, I guess New York.
Bagel, pizza. Right. Bagel. One of them.
Yeah.
Pizza bagel.
There you go. We just figured it out. We have just figured out the official state food of New York.
So what would you guys eat when you're there? Would you research like the best hole in the wall, this and that, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was like a mixture of asking the locals and just kind of saying what's great. Like and it was a little hit or miss. I mean, I would say we had ribs in Kansas City. Those were a definite highlight.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the most disappointing regional food that I ate was St. Louis style pizza. Have you heard
of
that?
What is that?
No. I know, I hadn't heard of it either, but they claim ownership. They had toasted ravioli, which were pretty good, which were like deep fried ravioli.
Oh, that's not toasted.
They call
them deep fried.
That's what can I tell you? That's that I don't know how they make it, but okay. I think they call them toasted. But they have this St. Louis style pizza, which in my opinion, and I'm sure purists would, you know, debate it, but it just tasted like a thin, it was sort of like matzah that was like doused
cracker.
In water.
Oh,
yeah, no. It was like a stale cracker. So I was, because it sounded cool, I was like, wow, St. Louis style pizza, and like I love Chicago deep dish, so I thought I was going to be, you know, discovering this like new regional gem, but it was tepid at best.
Wow, that doesn't sound good to me either. But they are proud of it, right?
Yeah, and
their type.
Props to St. Louis on the toasted ravioli.
It's kind of like those kind of dud regional foods, like I think Philadelphia ice cream or something. It prides itself on not having any egg yolks in it, which seems to me a little inferior.
That sounds lame.
You gotta have that custard. I don't know.
Stick with a cheesesteak, Philly.
Yeah. What would be your ultimate date meal? And it doesn't have to be something that you'd cooked or found on the road, but just, you know, it's my own little personal record database that I'm collecting of every guest.
Wow. That is a great on-the-spot question. I think it would definitely be a homemade. I think it would definitely be a homemade meal.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, definitely drives up the romance and joy of a good date.
Right on.
If I was cooking, I take particular pride in my lasagna.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I think I would maybe go for some kind of like, and then I would build around that. So you have maybe like a Chianti, maybe a Caesar.
Chianti, like the wine. Okay.
Yeah. A Caesar
salad.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything special about the lasagna you like to do with it, or
I've only done
meat
this
or meat, not meat
a couple times, but do you know you can put brown sugar into lasagna?
Oh, I've never done that.
Yeah, it just gives it a little bit of a sweet edge.
Oh, where though? In the sauce or on top to caramelize it? Or?
No, not on top. In the sauce.
Okay, no. Not in the ricotta. Okay.
No.
I'm trying to figure this out. Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a nice kind of like comforting little homemade.
Some candles, you know, maybe a little bit of Etta James or Nina Simone on the stereo, and bam.
Lasagna party. I like that. That's a good one. I was thinking about this the other day because the last two guests have asked me, what is your ultimate date meal? And I was like, I don't, you know. But on the subject of like the most kind of like graphically sexy meal or food, I was thinking the bone marrow, like a roasted bone marrow might be really that like, have you ever eaten it? Like the taste is just so
it's decadent.
Greasy. It's decadent.
It leans towards gluttonous because it's just so rich.
I mean, there's nothing else to it but gluttony. There's no nutrition really.
It is good though. And finger foods.
Yeah, definitely. The finger food is messy. You got to like scoop it out of the bone. Okay, that would be mine.
Ethiopian is a fun date meal.
Oh.
Like any food that you can share, like that you can just use your hands and rip into together, I would say.
Yeah. What's that one for
Ethiopian? Like you get like the big injera bread and then you just rip a little bit of the bread and you kind of have a big, you know.
Spread of things to dip it in.
Yeah, or to pick up. But it's just very, like, you're going to make a mess together. So I think
so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I think that using your hands and just taking some participatory role in the food is
it's
always a good way to connect.
Yeah. And no restrictions, I would say, to the meal. Like, you know, trying to eat a romantic vegan meal is not really my jam.
Oh, really?
Well, like, I don't know. I just, like, I eat everything. So that's...
So no restrictions on... what's in it? That's a turnoff, you think?
I mean, I would prefer to date a woman who like eats pretty
much
everything. Yeah.
Okay, so no vegans. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, have you ever biased against any vegans?
No, I wouldn't. No, I have dated. Okay. I have dated vegans or vegetarians.
So it's sort of emblematic of a personality trait that is not.
It's just
as
like an.
Open.
It would just be like an openness for life.
Awesome. Okay. Very cool. And what are some of the best records that you've in your memory recorded?
So the Record Setter book is filled with a lot of
like your personal favorites,
gems. I'm with you. We just did the top 15 recordsetter.com world records of 2011, and number one is just like, it brings tears to my eyes of joy. It is a teenage girl named Spinderella, and she's part of a breakdance troupe that was, I think, based in Chicago, but they just moved to LA. And she did the world's longest.
Isn't she with Salt and Pepper?
This is new school.
Okay,
this is Spinderella 2.0. But I think you're right. I know I wanted the same thing.
That's a good name.
This is a new school Spinderella, and she did the world's longest head spin. And it's like, it's an almost 15 minute long video. And she just, I don't understand how she does it.
Wow.
There's like a funky beat playing in the background. And she just gets up on her head and just keeps going and going and going. And
for 15 minutes?
Yeah.
That is really amazing. And cool. I don't know where else I would see that, you know, like in video than something like Record Center.
Well, we have, I mean, we have, like I say, over 12,000 records on the website now, and almost all of them are in video form. So, like there's lots of pretty extraordinary demonstrations of what humans can do.
Do you have any records that you just hope somebody will do? You kind of just think of it one day and...
Yeah, I mean, I like to think about, I mean, there are lots of records that I want to set. You know, I've set about a dozen, but all of mine have been broken. I think my proudest one that I set was the most bananas fit in a pair of pants while wearing them.
Whoa.
But it's actually been beaten a couple of times, and now it's sort of sparked like a wave of people setting records of, I can fit blank in my pants, like most toy cars fit in a pair of pants, most potatoes fit in a pair of pants, so... I'm a big pinball player, so like I would love to see more pinball records. Like I think a record for the longest time to keep a pinball ball in play would be pretty awesome.
Oh wow, that could be pretty long, I bet.
Yeah, like yes. Oh, the best players could do it for over an hour for sure.
All right, so are those some of your New Year's resolutions? Must play pinball for a couple days straight.
I'm quite good, but I'm not a world elite player. But I like, you know, sometimes it's fun to just set a record that you know is likely going to get beaten, and then you just say like, okay, so I set the record for the longest time to keep a pinball in play at 17 minutes, and then I know that somebody's going to come along and crush me.
Right, and I like that because it, like the beauty of it, it sounds like it's not, because there's records for highest scores, mm-hmm. but this is something totally unrelated to scorekeeping.
Yeah,
keeping it in play.
It's just fun to then to be creative, and there's so many variations in all this stuff. And again, there's just never been a place. You know, I always say like, you know, I always use Carrot Top as an example, the comedian. Mm-hmm. So Carrot Top will likely never earn a space in the Encyclopedia Britannica. Like,
okay.
He's just too left field. Whereas I think there's, of course, it makes sense that in the digital age, there's an encyclopedia that has space for an entry on a guy like Carrot Top. And I think that same kind of philosophy and thinking applies to world records. There are just, you know, I mean, millions of record categories that people can create. And, you know, the existing model to this point has never allowed for those kinds of feats, and we're just trying to build the tools so that people can, you know, set whatever world records they want.
Awesome. So congratulations, and looking forward to a whole lot of new inspiring records in the new year.
Thank you. We gotta get you in the Record Setter Book of World Records Volume 2.
Right, me chopping my fingers off when I'm trying to chop a million onions and failing.
I'll bring the band-aids.
All right. Thanks so much, Jen Rollman, and check out recordsetter.com, and thanks to Jack and everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.